Behavioral scientist and author Dr. Pragya Agarwal joins us on the line all the way from the north of Liverpool. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm excellent. And Lovelyn Wade, thank you so much. Director of L&N Advisors, focusing very much on social justice and embedding that in the practices of organizations. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Rufile. Good to be here.
Indeed. We are a country with a young history and a tumultuous one when it comes to race. I think we're world famous for that. And Doctor, it's been quite interesting to take a look at your book, Wish We Knew What to Say, and talking to children about race, because it comes at a time when a very heated engagement occurred in one of South Africa, or at least Cape Town's neighborhoods. A concern around a small party, a matric ball, that was held, that was exclusively attended by white children, which raised the ire of other children and political parties and parents within the country. It ended up getting washed away with a great deal of politics. But at the core of this discussion is really what you talk about in the book, Doctor, which is that the fact that different races or different cultures of children happen to be thrown together is not a reason to presume that they will necessarily get on. And please, won't you just take us into your confidence, as you did in the book, as to your realization of this?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, it is quite a tricky conversation to have, and I think it takes a while for parents or educators or carers to realize that themselves we have to unlearn a lot of our biases that we carry with us from childhood and our experiences and the way we've been brought up. And I don't think a conversation around race or racism has traditionally been a common or just something that happens in our schools or in our homes, even as we live more and more in multicultural diverse societies. So when I wrote my first book that came out earlier this year, which was Sway, Unraveling Unconscious Bias, I realized a lot of conversation happening around that was that we assume that our children are growing up in a very unbiased way. And so when I was bringing up my older child, I'd moved very as a young single parent to England. And at that point of time, I was, much like many first-generation immigrants, was trying to fit in, was trying to conform, not to draw attention to difference. And I think a lot of people do that. They believe that, I think a lot of immigrants at least do that, or a lot of people of color do that. They try to fit in and not draw attention to difference. But gradually over the years, realized that actually difference still exists. And by not drawing attention to difference, or by not talking to our children about it, we are dismissing a lot of the histories and legacies of oppression that different people might have carried because of their skin color or because of their cultural context. And when we don't do that, we are not acknowledging it. But what we instead have to do is to make our children aware that difference exists, and there can be difference in how people are treated because of that. But just because difference exists doesn't mean that we are unequal. I think that is something that is really important that I think we need to focus on.
Lovelyn, this is something that you arrest yourself with this with L&N Advisors, and in terms of your work with respect to social justice, as the doctor says, the differences, there are imbalances that are natural. And can we just talk a little bit about the dangers of doing what we tend to like to do in South Africa, which is either roll our eyes and say, I'm sick of talking about race, or pretend that the rainbow is necessarily already equal, as we tried to do for the first 26 years of our history?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for that question. So I think part of the challenge of how we talk about race in South Africa is exactly to your point, is that we're dishonest in conversations about race. So we prefer to gloss over history, gloss over difference, and gloss over the ways in which our history is still very much part of our present. And I think the consequence of that is that many of our children, but especially in South Africa, I think it's that many white children and children of the upper classes are often then not very well prepared to live in a society when they have to leave their high school bubble or leave their university bubble. They're often not well prepared to exist in the real world because they've been raised in this bubble that says everyone is the same, everyone is equal, you know, difference doesn't matter, which really is nonsensical when you think about the reality of our society. And so for me, part of my encouragement is to say to people, the problem is not difference. Yeah, differences are not a problem. So research tells us that children do see differences from a very early age. And that's just part of their own processing of the world, their own curiosity, their own making sense of the world. They see difference. Difference is not a problem. The problem is our biases around difference. And when we give children messages that certain differences are problematic, that's when we start to find difficulty in having honest conversations about race. So already, when you look at schools in South Africa, because of our history, schools are very much racially segregated and very much segregated along the lines of class. And so when a child is going to a school, maybe in a suburb, so an ex-Model C school, so those are schools that are owned by government but were formerly for whites only and are now open to all children. When a child is going to that type of school or an elite independent school where the majority of staff and the majority of students are white, and the only place where they are seeing black people is in positions of subservience or service in that environment, we're telling children that these differences mean something. These differences have social, economic, political consequences. And when we start to give children messages that tell us that differences have material consequences, children then internalize those messages and start to think those are patterns and rules in society that are just natural. So part of being able to...
Go ahead.
I just want to say part of being able to talk to kids about race is also enabling them, especially in the South African context, to understand that the differences we see around race are not natural. They're not part of the natural order. It's actually a consequence of history, and that helps us build the racial literacy of children in our society.
So this becomes very important from very early. You know, Dr. Agarwal's book kicks off with talking about race from birth to 3 years, and then the different sort of three-year spaces after that. And it's an important, in the context of this incident that has prompted this conversation, it's quite important that these are matriculants. So they were in their last year of high school, far, far beyond where this discussion should have probably had originally had taken place. But before they step into the school and the constructs that Lovelin you describe, you see that the patterns are at home. Mm-hmm. And the way that the adults hijacked this, they had the very, very entrenched racial biases from those adults in Brackenfell who were throwing stones at black people and hitting them with bats, and the EFF, who the political party that has very, very set views about what whiteness is. How do we look at that? And I'm going to give you a chance to think about it because we have to go to the traffic very briefly. But how do we look at that, those very hardened perspectives that adults are imposing on children as against the lie that we've established around colorblindness? We'll ask that question after the break. If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Dr. Pragya Agarwal, behavioral scientist and author of We Wish We Knew What to Say, talking with children about race, and of course with Lovelin Wadeye, who is director of LNN Advisors, a company and a consultancy that is concerned with embedding social justice in the daily practices of organizations.
You're with Cape Talk.
This is Refilwe Moloto on Breakfast.
We continue our Wednesday panel this morning with Dr. Pragya Agarwal, behavioral scientist and author of the book Wish We Knew What to Say, talking with children about race, and of course with Lovelin Wadeye. Before we went to the, who is the director of LNN Advisors, before we went to the break, ladies, I left you with the thought around how do we reconcile the very hardened attitudes of parents, and I don't want this to only be about the white parents, right? Because we've got this issue amongst parents of color. And this kind of lie about colorblindness that we tell ourselves, from an early age. Doctor, perhaps I can start with you.
Yes, I think traditionally colorblindness has been seen as, and still I think colorblindness is being seen as an approach in when we ignore color, we assume that everybody's okay and everybody is. And we're having these conversations here in the UK, and we've seen that in the US as well. I think this is why it's so important that we start from a very young age, because children are seeing difference, not because they're born biased or have prejudices or stereotypes associated with it, but they're seeing these differences in skin color as a way of making sense of the world. And when they get socialized into or in the society around with media and books and their parents' attitudes or what they see in schools, these turn into stereotypes. They start becoming ingrained, deeply rooted prejudices, and they form a sense of social hierarchy, as your other panelist was talking about, where they see that certain people are doing certain roles and jobs in the world, and they form their sense of the hierarchy. And I think this is why it's so important that we start this education from a very young age, that we challenge these stereotypes, that we question these stereotypes that children are forming. Just immersing them in multicultural diverse society is not going to make a difference, because still they'll carry these stereotypes and with them. And so, yes, the parents and the educators have to do this work themselves, but also we have to question the stereotypes that we see in media and books around them. And then they have to grow up in an environment where they believe that people are not naturally falling into these hierarchies. Yes, they have to understand history. And I think an education in history is really very important, which we are having a conversation here in the UK, but it seems like it's very relevant there in South Africa as well. And I think children are growing up without a sense of their history and how that shapes a contemporary society.
Many are very ahistorical, you're right. And that comes down to just refusing to admit what happened in this country. That's the first thing. But this is highlighting to, like, what Lovelyn was saying a little earlier about, you know, you can send a black child to a mixed school, but if every single teacher or every single person who is in a position of authority is white, there's not going to be a real understanding. You have to see it to believe it, I guess. So let's take a step back into, we're all people of color. Let's take a step back into our own biases within those groups. Doctor, you write about colorism.
Mm-hmm.
When you speak you're speaking now about how what we see, we do have, you know, you are of India, so we understand the caste system and how darker is worse. We have the very same here in South Africa, or darker is worse and lighter is better. We have that with our mixed race, with respect to, you know, greater access if you're what's called colored here. As opposed to being black. And Lovelyn, I think you might have a great perspective also from a Nigerian South African perspective as well. Maybe let me hand this one to you first. I mean, let's talk a little bit about self-hate and how colorism can impact how young children of color approach the world and their confidence to be able to take on the world.
Yeah, beautiful question. So the concept you're referring to is what we talk about as internalized oppression. So internalized oppression is essentially what happens when people who are part of a marginalized group start to internalize the lies they've been taught about themselves by the system that's oppressing them, and consequently enact that on themselves and others within their group, right? So colorism is one manifestation of that, where people of color hold themselves to this white or Western beauty standard and say that your proximity to lightness or whiteness makes you more desirable, more attractive, more preferable. In more insidious ways, this manifests around the ways in which black people of color in general, might think about things like intelligence and competence. So if you're in an education system where you only get taught about the contributions of Europeans and Westerners to modern thought, modern inventions, you start to, if you go through the South African education system, you probably get the idea that Africans did nothing in history and we were just waiting to be saved by European colonizers, and they brought all these inventions and all these ideas and we were sitting and twiddling our thumbs. And so when that's the messaging you're getting, as a child of color, it's very easy, and I hear this from children when I work in schools, to internalize this idea that you come from a people who didn't contribute much, and as a result, that also impacts your own sense of self. It impacts the way you see yourself in the world, the contributions you can make, your own performance, your own achievement. And so, for me, Rufilo, to your earlier question about how we engage parents, I think we need to recognize that parents are also products of the same system, right? So whilst we can talk about internalized oppression and the inferiority complex that that produces, which again, there's a lot of research about the inferiority complex that many children of color, but specifically black children, tend to internalize. Similarly, we have to talk about the internalized superiority that white adults and white children are getting from the education system, from the society that they live in. So similarly, if you're regularly getting messages that the group you come from, you know, are the only inventors in history, have written all the books that you study from, are always shown in a positive light in TV shows, etc., and are the people that are sources of knowledge at your school, then you start to internalize the sense of superiority that actually you are better, you are entitled to respect in society, etc. And so part of this is actually recognizing that there is work around developing literacy around race that needs to be done for everybody. Yeah, so racial literacy is something that both white people and people of color need, but I think we've got to recognize that our work is different. So the work that we need to do for children of color, so in a lot of my sessions with kids, when I ask them, what are the messages you wish you'd received about your own race from an early age? Hands down, in every single workshop I've done in this country with black children, one of the things that comes up is, I wish that I was taught that I could be proud of being black. I wish that I was taught that being black was not a bad thing. It was not about being poor. It wasn't about being less than. I wish that I was taught it could be something I could be proud of. And when I ask white children, what are the things you wish you were told, white children invariably will say either A, I wish we were taught more about our own history and our privilege, and B, I wish that my world was broader, that I knew more about other people's cultures and contributions to history so that I have a broader perspective of the world. So that's the work we need to do.
Okay. I want to just close off with a question, particularly coming from a caller, because these are internalized perspectives, but they are hardened and they are exacerbated or emphasized by the very real realities of class and economics. So these lines are clear cut. Doctor, you know, I mean, the first thing, of course, is for every single one of us to get this book. And then the second thing, of course, is to book Loveland to go to every school in the country.
Yeah.
But talk to us about how do we talk to our children about class and economic discrimination in an honest way from an early age, while still trying to tell them the rosy picture, which is that we are really all equal.
Yeah, I think this is why I emphasize that this book is for parents of all backgrounds and ethnicity. It's not just supposed to be a manual for white parents, because I think, as your other panelist was talking about, we need to make all children aware of their identity and of their history and of their place in the world. And I think it's really important that we all raise our children with a very secure identity, whatever racial identity it might be. And all these internalized messages or internalized oppressions have to be addressed from a very young age, because that creates these problems later on. And so being honest, the parents don't know anything or the educators don't know anything. So it can be a learning process together. But being honest with their questions, not dismissing the questions, not brushing them aside, trying to tackle the question that, yes, there is a dominant ideology in this world. Whiteness becomes a dominant ideology. And that is why we need to be more aware of representation. So people, children see themselves in the world. So children see people like them out in the media and books, and expose them to diverse books, books that challenge these stereotypes, books where children can see themselves in the world, so that they know that they are not an anomaly. They are not an aberration. They don't have any stereotypes and labels associated with them. And that's true for all children, not just white children, but children of all ethnicity. And I think when you come to mixed heritage or mixed race or biracial children, I think it becomes quite a tricky conversation as well, which I address in the book as well, about how do we make sure children understand the spectrum of identities as well. And as they grow older, we can tackle more and more about how children can become an ally, because not just for themselves, but children have to be able to stand up for other people if they see any kind of racism or racial injustice happening. And That is what we need to empower our children, not to see themselves as victims or oppressors, but as allies, as anti-racists who are able to change the world if they can.
Dr. Pragya Agarwal, indeed. I'm so sorry, we're all out of time. Thank you so much for your insights. Behavioral scientist and author of Wish We Knew What to Say, Talking with Children About Race, all the way from the north of Liverpool. And Lovelyn Wade, thank you so much, director of LNN Advisors, particularly an advisory firm focused on embedding social justice in various organizations.